disperse immediately or you will be subject to arrest with my help.
Say nothing but a thief on a time loan. 128 bit war, you play Nintendo. On some shooter, so put the bridge down. Don't feed us to the killer bees. We get what we deserve, life. Bury me with my MP3s. Write my manifesto in 72 DPI. Life's just a game, you got cheated, never learn. I write these songs for every bridge that ain't been burned. For every cop car that ain't been turned.
Welcome to This Is America, March 8th, 2024. On today's episode, we feature a special interview with Jeremy White, a long-term community organizer in Southern California who is currently facing felony charges stemming from a counter-protest against violent far-right gangs in San Diego in 2017. We talk about how Jeremy and other activists were selectively targeted by the state and law enforcement, while fascist groups like the Proud Boys and American Guard were allowed to run wild and openly attack members of the public.
Hi, I'm Jeremy White. I am a leftist organizer and activist based in Los Angeles. And I've been doing this for about 10 years, everything from political organizing to mutual aid and humanitarian aid and street protests.
Well, thank you for joining us. We're going to be talking about your case. It's involved with this ongoing situation in San Diego that stems from a demonstration. I believe it was the day after January 6th, correct?
3 days after, January 9th, in Pacific Beach, San Diego, there was a protest led by the American Guard and Proud Boys. And some of the local San Diego, like anti-fascist activists, organized a counter-protest and invited folks from neighboring cities to come down and support. And I was invited as a street medic to come and help treat people if they were hurt.
Right. So this is 3 days after the attempted pro-Trump coup in Washington, D.C. There was other demonstrations that took place around that time as well. You know, a couple days before that, I believe people stormed the Capitol in Oregon as well. So there was a lot going on. Of course, you know, this type of stuff is front page news, headline everywhere. So just tell us, you know, what charges are you facing right now? And sort of, I guess the bigger question is, and we can kind of dive into this as we discuss this, but what's at stake with this?
Yeah, so the charges are, as they stand now, are two felonies, one felony assault and one felony conspiracy to commit a riot. And it looks like it's a 2-year sentence for me. I have no criminal record. But even then, that's the best they were willing to do with the plea deal was 2 years and two felonies, which was just kind of insane when you think that I showed up as a medic and helped treat folks. But originally they were trying to hit me with 5 felonies and 7 years in prison. But after a grand jury indictment, it dropped down to 2.
So let's just kind of start off and discuss what happened that day, because I think people really need to appreciate sort of the violence that was coming from the far right and the fact that people on the anti-fascist side or people like you that just showed up to be a street medic for any protesters that may have been injured. You know, you mentioned the Proud Boys and the American Guard. Of course, they're, you know, well known for violence. You know, the Proud Boys, literally, to move up in the organization's hierarchy, you have to engage in violence and attack people on the other side. American Guard was started by Brian James, who's a neo-Nazi organizer, I believe based in the East Coast. He attended, you know, the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville in 2017. And the American Guard was sort of a rebrand. He used to be involved in a really well-known violent group called the Vinlanders. And then the American Guard is sort of his new organization. But they're a lot like the Proud Boys, except they're probably better known for having like more openly neo-Nazi members, and they're just engaged in lots and lots of violence. But tell us what happened that day.
Yeah, we showed up kind of disorganized. You know, it's like, it's funny when people say Antifa is an organization, because it's just not. It's just a group of people with an ideology. But, you know, people showed up kind of scattered, gathered on the boardwalk, and were immediately met with violence from individuals and small groups that were in the area. One of them was the son of one of the American Guard members brought a BB gun and fired it at one of the protesters and was even detained and let go. And that was never mentioned in the court case. There was another guy, one of the American Guard members. I don't remember his name right now, but he had a 6-inch Bowie knife on his hip and was stalking the crowd. Chris Weirich from that group threw a smoke grenade into our midst and was trying to instigate, you know, getting the cops to run in and attack us. It was really insane. Like they were extremely violent that day. They came to do violence. And, you know, as always, the cops just have their backs to them the entire protest.
And how did the far right brand the demonstration? Because this is several days after January 6th.
Yeah.
Maybe some of them even, I don't know if you can answer this, but maybe some of them were even in D.C. for that demonstration.
Yes. Some of them were in D.C. Some of them were actually in L.A. on the 6th, where Berlinda Nebo was attacked by a group of Proud Boys and other right wingers. It was like a woman that was walking through and she was grabbed. They snatched the wig off of her head, smacked her, sprayed her point blank with pepper spray.
This is an African American woman, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. Berlinda Nebo. She was attacked just walking downtown where they were gathering, and the cops just let it all happen. So yeah, that some of them were there in DC. Some of them were just local doing violence right in front of us. So.
And do you feel that sort of hype, I guess, that they were feeling at the time, played into that? Were they?
Oh, absolutely. They were branding it as a Stop the Steal rally. So it was the same energy, the same, narrative and messaging as what was happening in DC 3 days before.
You know, people arrive there. There's sort of groups of these organized fascist groups, Proud Boys, American Guard, they have a BB gun. There's altercations. They're armed, obviously. So what happens then? How long does this thing actually go on for?
It was a couple hours, and it was like a lot of street actions. There was some engagement with the police. There was a lot of scuffles. I treated several people that day, mostly for chemical attacks, like pepper spray or bear mace. I broke up a couple fights. It was just very heated, and you know, I'm not from there. I didn't know anyone there outside of just, you know, a few people I kind of recognized from LA, but it's, they're accusing me. One of the things they're accusing me of the assault is that they say I pointed at a guy and he was then jumped, which is crazy. Not only because I didn't actually do that. The video shows me not pointing at him, but pointing ahead of him, like down an alley, because the guy had just thrown the smoke grenade. So I was pointing it away of, you know, to egress to get out of there. But so I point down the alley and shortly afterwards, this guy with the Bowie knife gets jumped by a couple people at the action. I didn't know these people. I'd never met them before. They don't listen to me. I'm a medic. I'm clearly patched up as a medic. And, you know, the idea that they're trying to put this felony assault on me for allegedly pointing at a guy and people I've never met just did my bidding is kind of indicative of, you know, the unhinged nature of this case. They think, you know, they think that I'm the ringleader. They even said so when they raided my home and took me into San Diego in December of 2021. I heard the word ringleader a couple times. So they probably think that because I have a history of political organizing, but in like hardcore leftist spaces, they don't get like, I'm a white guy. I don't really step up to that kind of level of organizing very often, especially when it's like a very diverse crowd and there's young people whose voices need to be heard. Like I'm more there to just support and be like a community member. You know, it's, I'm not trying to lead anything. So,
right.
I really do think they were just speculating and trying to take out. They even asked me how much George Soros pays me. Like this is an official interview they were doing with me when they brought me in.
Who asked you that?
The two cops from San Diego who were leading the investigation, the detectives. And I wasn't the only one. Multiple other detainees that were asked that as well, which is crazy.
Right. And for those listeners that for some reason don't get that reference, George Soros is a billionaire, financier, philanthropist, is known for like, donating and financially backing various nonprofits and democratic politicians, which has turned into this you know, very sort of like 21st century anti-Semitic trope that George Soros is financing and backing, you know, a variety of social movements and riots and stuff, which of course is just ludicrous. And it's, again, this kind of, it's a replay of sort of like the classical anti-Semitic tropes that we saw play out during like the civil rights movement that, you know, of course, people can't organize themselves. It's really these powerful Jews that are just financing everything. And this is something you hear all the time, and we see it on Fox News all the time. So the fact that these cops are regurgitating that just shows the degree in which they are invested in that ideology. And they're also animated by these literal far-right conspiracy theories, which, I mean, it's not surprising to me, but the fact that they're very upfront about it, and they actually believe that stuff, I mean, they're literally asking you, I think speaks volumes to this case, but also it just shows the degree in which they obviously are sympathetic to the side of the far right and these fascist groups that are actually causing violence against the public.
Yep. The DA, even Summer Stephen, in the early court proceedings was quoting Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham about, you know, Antifa being an organized gang and things like that in the court. So,
too, I mean, you're talking about people that went out, you know, this broad community call to go protest these far right groups, and the American Guard and the Proud Boys, like, literally are a gang. I mean, they have this internal hierarchy structure. I mean, some of them are even involved in the Republican Party and, like, sit on, you know, GOP boards and stuff. I mean, these people literally operate as, like, a gang in that classical sense in which there's leadership that tells people what to do, as opposed to these broad, you know, protest movements. Like you were saying.
It's totally lateral and grassroots, and yeah, it's...
Right. And it's just so ironic. I mean, it sucks that you have to deal with this, but it's so ironic that they are essentially inferring that all on you. And I'm assuming, because maybe you're older than some of these other people, that you're this ringleader. In reality, you know, you went out to be a medic against these far-right groups that have, like, this established hierarchy and leadership and stuff. Of course, none of that is up on the table at all.
Yeah, and political affiliations and you know, whatever kind of backroom deals they're making. I know that one of the biggest donor to Summer Stephen, the DA, her biggest, you know, fiscal supporter, is the father of a kid who just got massively wrapped up in the January 6th insurrection. I cannot remember his name right now, but he just got indicted on major charges for organizing the riot that turned into the insurrection. So these are the people that, you know, it is like organized crime. It's crazy.
So you were saying this went on for a couple hours. Was there a point that it ended, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the police called a dispersal order, and we left. We dispersed, and the right wingers didn't. And what's really funny is that there's a journalist that dug up the body cam and helicopter audio footage. These cops were openly discussing amongst themselves how the Proud Boys had hijacked the riot. They weren't with the program. They were anti-police, and they're just having full-on discussions. Like, there's no doubt that they understood what they were saying to each other. They're replying and confirming to each other. So,
break that down a little bit. Like, what do you mean that the Proud?
Oh,
so the Proud Boys was just basically doing whatever they wanted to do, and they weren't listening to the
as soon as the anti-fascists left, the Proud Boys got out of control. Go figure. You know, when there's not a counter protest to keep that shit in check, then they start attacking whoever they can. They start doing whatever they want. The cops aren't stopping them. And at that point, the cops started talking amongst themselves over their channels, saying, this has gotten out of control. We can't control this protest anymore. The Proud Boys have hijacked it. So they're admitting that. Well, then why weren't any of them arrested? Why weren't they, you know, why weren't any of them brought up on charges? There was another thing that happened after we all left. Some of these American Guard guys were prowling the neighborhood, and they came across a man and woman in an alleyway. I think the man was unhoused. But these two people were walking together and they got jumped for the shirt the guy was wearing. I don't even remember what it was, but he may not even been at the protest. They got jumped and beat up so bad that they made the woman like urinate, like piss herself, and then bragged about it on camera. It's all on camera. And the DA has all of this, like it's been sent to her and she refuses to prosecute. So yeah, it's very, very one-sided.
Which again just shows, I mean, you know, the whole theory of law enforcement is that they're there for the public good and that, you know, they're paid out of our tax dollars to protect us. And here you have this thing where obviously that's not happening. And, you know, they are clearly looking to suppress one side, which is there just to stop the far right from doing exactly what you just said, which is engage in violence with the public, which is exactly what happened. And you could even argue that the police helped facilitate that. They allowed the conditions in which that violence was able to then transmit from the fascists and the far right groups to the public, like you just said.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You said people on the left dispersed. So then how did we get to the situation in which people are now facing charges? They were arrested later? You were arrested later? Or what happened?
Yeah, I went home, went about my life. I moved even. I moved into a new place in 2020. In December of 2020, at 4:30 in the morning, this was January, early January that the action happened. In early December 2020, my home was raided by upwards of 30 police from San Diego and Los Angeles Police Department and LA Sheriffs. I ran downstairs thinking it was my neighbor knocking on the door, messing with me, and was like barely had my bathrobe tied and opened the door to a freaking assault rifle pointed at my chest from 10 feet away. They dragged me and my roommates outside for a couple hours. It was freezing, no shoes on, just standing on the pavement. They wouldn't tell us what we're on. We're just saying like, we think you have the wrong house. What is this? And then they pulled me inside and showed me a warrant. They had a search warrant for my place and cuffed me up and took me to San Diego. And I spent 5-6 days there. They were trying to deny bail. It was really ugly. Luckily, that wasn't granted and I was able to bail out because they weren't feeding me. I lost about 20 pounds in jail. When I checked in, I told them my diet. I told them I don't eat meat and they were just feeding me meat every single day. I don't know if it was on purpose or not, but it was bad. So yeah, I got out and then started fighting this case. I was stuck with a lawyer from Office of Assigned Counsel at first, which was really scary and terrifying. Like for the first almost year of this thing, I had this guy who was just trying to get me to plead and take 7 years in prison. Yeah. So I hooked up with my lawyer, Curtis Briggs, who's an incredible attorney. He's been doing the case pro bono and he's been filing motion after motion for dismissal for selective prosecution, things like that. He's really, really amazing.
And what has the response from that been? Because I mean, like obviously a lot of people that listen to this are going to be sympathetic to, you know, what you're going through, of course. But I mean, when you lay it out, it is so clear that this is, like you said, a selective prosecution on one side. And it seems like they're just searching for anything to go after folks on one side while allowing these other people to just engage in horrific violence. So what was the response when your attorney has pushed back and said, like, look, this is BS?
It's so the motions haven't been granted, but I think they did make an impact with the judge and they will definitely make an impact. You know, this angle of the case will make an impact with a jury, I have no doubt. When you look at all the facts presented, no matter what they think of me or my politics, the facts are I was not there to do violence that day, and these people were.
So I know there's been lots of reporting on this case. I know USA Today has run some articles that's been largely sympathetic, talking about the far right. Can you talk a little bit about that, just how sort of the – because originally this was sort of billed as like, you know, two extremes go at it in the streets. And now it's clear. It's like this is selective prosecution basically running, you know, carrying water for the far right.
Yeah, I mean, even the first articles were completely biased towards calling us the violent ones. You know, there's an LA Times article that I'll never be able to get removed off the internet, but it's just saying the worst shit. I mean, it's talking about all five charges, which three of them were dropped because they were completely bogus, but that'll always be out there. So that's been stressful. I'm glad media is coming out now. Super grateful to you and, you know, other podcasts that have had me on to share the story because, yeah, it's hard. Even the best of articles aren't able to kind of fully go into, you know, the detail of what's really happening. I have an interview on Friday with the Times of San Diego with a reporter there that my lawyer set up. So that should be beneficial. I think that's going to be a good piece as well, especially locally. But yeah, no, just trying to get the word out because the media is always going to skew it. And yeah, like you said, they're holding water for the right and letting them get away with this. And those people are all free, no charges, doing what they do, planning whatever they're planning. Meanwhile, 12, you know, activists that chose to stand up to them are facing these crazy charges and years in court. A lot of them pled out already. Some of them are already in jail. So it's really scary.
The people prosecuting this, their connections to the far right. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's there's been some seeming quid pro quo stuff in the past. One of the people that is listed as a victim, oddly enough, in the case, is an American Guard member who was arrested on an assault charge prior to this. I don't know exactly how long before, but not that long before. The sheriffs recommended prosecution because it was that bad. Like, how often do the sheriffs actually recommend prosecuting a right winger for an assault? The DA, Summer Steven, declined, chose not to prosecute. And then there was a campaign contribution in her, in her inbox from this guy after he got out and got off. So there's stuff like that. She's connected to this really wealthy right wing family, that was implicated in the January 6th riots. They're like her biggest donor in San Diego. A lot of threads like that are coming together that I'm really hopeful that a jury will be able to see, oh, this person is connected and has a bias definitely against the left. So regardless of what you feel about anti-fascist protesters, this is just completely unfair. It's using the justice system to go after political opponents.
So where do things go from here? What is the timeline that you're looking at?
We have trial date on the 18th. So I'm getting ready for that. I have a court appearance tomorrow for something and then more interviews. I'm actually putting together with friends two fundraisers this weekend, to try to help cover costs because I work in the film industry and last year and even now just the strike has completely hamstrung my ability to make money. So at a time when I was hoping to just have something to rely on to get me through, I'm completely broke. So we're doing fundraisers and I have a GoFundMe up, that I can share with you. That's my immediate concern is trying to cover costs for court because I'll have to travel and stay in San Diego for anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks, it sounds like, for the trial, as does my lawyer. And then there's just some more filing costs. I have to pay for an expert witness to testify, things like that add up. So fundraising, and then getting ready for trial and just mentally preparing for that as best as possible.
We want to obviously encourage people to donate and check out these upcoming fundraisers. Is there a place that people can go to get updates?
Yeah, if you're on Instagram, check out Superpower to the People, all spelled out. Superpower to the People. They've been really wonderful helping shine a light on this. My GoFundMe link is actually in the bio for that page. And then if you're in Los Angeles and want to come out and support this weekend, we're having an event at First Street Pool Hall in Boyle Heights on Sunday at 7. It's also on that page on Superpower to the People. So you can get all the info there. It's $10 at the door. And we're going to have some amazing performances, artists, We're going to have a burlesque. Actually, the NoHo Stripper Union is coming out to do stripper karaoke, which is going to be awesome. Like, I'm blown away with the support that's coming in from this right now.
That's awesome. Well, we wish you the best of luck. Is there anything else that we can talk about, or?
Just want to let people know to be safe out there. You know, we've got some troubling times ahead. You know, if you're new to the streets to protest, protect yourself, protect your identity as much as you can, and be safe out there. Keep each other safe. Cases like this are scary because they set a legal precedent for them to go after more people in just this manner. So that's why, you know, even though a bunch of the other people have pled out, I feel like it's my moral obligation to the movement to fight this to the end, you know, to not let them get this win. So I really appreciate all the support because that's helping me get there.